Hello and welcome to the Engagement Coach Podcast.
Welcome to the Engagement Coach Podcast with your host, Amrit Zander. So the topic of conversation this week is chronobiology. Now, I came across this topic a few years ago and I was amazed and blown away by the insights that were coming out about how our bodies work and the impact it could have on productivity and work. But very few people knew about it. And I still think there's much more awareness that needs to be raised. And in order to do that, we've brought in an expert, a chronobiologist, who has extensive insights and knowledge into this subject area, Dr. Kat. Thanks very much for joining us today.
A pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
So before we dive into understanding more about chronobiology, it's a fascinating subject. I would love to know more about you, your background, and you know, your credentials. If you could share them, that would be great.
Yeah, happy to. So my background, or my PhD, is in sort of the interface of sleep and chronobiology. And chronobiology, we'll talk about a bit more, but it's about the circadian rhythm, your body clock. So basically your internal timing system. And my PhD in particular looked at older people who have sleep problems and seeing whether doing a light therapy, so exposing them to more light and thereby strengthening the circadian system, strengthening their body clock, would improve their sleep. And I must say that before my PhD, before actually working with humans, I studied biology and zoology, and part of that was actually also in my master's had a chronobiological aspect. And there we were looking at seasonality, because while it is circadian rhythms, but actually the body clock, it relates to much more than just daily rhythms. So for me, this interest has been there for a very long time. But first of all, starting off with the animals and then shifting into the more complicated species, humans. And after my PhD, I then worked with shift workers in safety critical industries, where there's 24/7 operations and people need to sleep during the day to be able to work at night. And that is naturally, again, we'll talk about it probably a bit more later on, but for most people, this is very hard. It's not how, you know, we were designed in that sense. And so finding ways of how to help shift workers there to sleep better, and therefore, you know, perform better, but also be safer during the day. And after I did that for a little while, I sort of changed again. And what I do now is to work with people who experience sleep problems, predominantly insomnia, but also circadian rhythm disorders, helping them sleep well again and really thrive in their lives, because that's what it is. If you live in sync with your body clock and have a healthy sleep, then you really thrive in your life. And that's really what I'm helping people to do. And as part of that, I wrote a book called Sleep Sense to, again, share my passion and my understanding with others, to, yeah, like I said, help them and empower them to live a healthy life based on a healthy sleep.
That's fantastic. And, you know, it's interesting. I share your passion in this subject. I came across chronobiology probably about 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, in research that I was just doing in optimizing performance and you know, the neuroscience and psychology of how do we help leaders and managers at work. And it's an interesting subject that I don't think enough people know about. I don't think the general public at large knows anywhere enough about chronobiology and the impact it has on our lives and the impact it can have. How would you summarize chronobiology in a nutshell? I mean, you've almost done it in the introduction there, but, you know.
So for me, chronobiology, as I said, it's to do with the timing system in your body. So we all have a body clock that sits up in our brain, and in humans, it's about 50,000 cells up there in sort of roughly the middle of the brain that we collectively refer to as the body clock. And this clock sets the timing for everything else that happens in your body. And I like to think of it a bit like the conductor of an orchestra. Right, where the rest of the organs in your body, or even the cells, individual cells, these are all the musicians in a way. And they can all play beautifully. However, it needs the conductor to keep them organized, yeah, so that they don't get out of tune, because it's one musician playing after another. Sometimes it's two playing together. But in order to create a beautiful piece of music, we need a conductor. And that is what your body clock is doing, to keep, first of all, everything within the body aligned. And then the second part of the body clock is to keep your body and everything in there, all the processes aligned with the outside world. Because there's, in a way, no use to us humans, or certainly our ancestors, to be awake in the middle of the night and roam around, because we don't have very good night vision, whereas the big cats have. And so we would have easily fallen prey to them, and that would have been the end of the human species. So again, the body clock keeps everything in synchrony within the body, and then the body with the outside world, so that we can do the right thing at the right time of day, really. And this extends, it's not just the day, but this extends then actually across the different seasons as well.
I love your analogy to the conductor of an orchestra. When you were talking about that, you know, you can imagine a conductor and an orchestra playing completely out of sync, and the noise and the mess that would make. In reality, you talked about shift working. When we are out of sync, what are the repercussions on our bodies? What physically happens or could happen?
Most people will experience jet lag, right? And that is when things become out of sync, when your body, and therefore also, yeah, the internal system, is out of sync with the external day of this new place where you are. This is it's called relatively mild and sort of short term, because you, within a few days, depending which way you go and how far, you adapt again. But what it leads to is this misalignment within the body. And that can then, if this happens continuously or repeatedly, lead to metabolic diseases, but also mental problems and generally health problems overall.
So if you're, you know, a lot in our leadership development programs that we've got out there, we talk a lot about self-help, you know, our own well-being, and sleep is a critical part of it. Now, if you're a leader out there leading a team of people and you're repeatedly not sleeping, so I can understand that the jet lag, you know, that they're extreme elements that occur infrequently, but the daily not getting enough sleep and every day that having an impact on your ability, what are the implications on people who are leading people and how they perform?
So there are two things, and they're intrinsically related. That is the too little sleep and mistimed sleep, right? They sort of often go hand in hand in a way, because the body clock sets the timing for our sleep, and we see a huge variation amongst people. It's a large spectrum of the early larks and the late owls, and there can be sort of 11, 12 hours in between the earliest and the latest person, which in theory means they can share a bed and never overlap. And it's important to know what is your sleep window, the timing, and that also relates then to the duration, because that will give you the most efficient sleep. If you sleep too little or outside this window, of course you get still sleep, but the quality may be not as good, and certainly duration isn't. Now, that then has implications on your metabolic health, but also on your performance, because your performance, or your alertness, I should say, follows a 24-hour rhythm. And very roughly speaking, if you have slept well, you know, right sleep window, when you wake up, your alertness starts to rise in the morning. Then we see a small dip sort of in the early afternoon. And we all have this. And for some people, it's more, for others, sleep. But we all have this dip. And it doesn't matter what you eat, that dip is there. And then again, alertness will rise in sort of up until the evening, probably as its highest, actually, sort of in the early evening. And then there's a sort of a sharp turn, and alertness dips again, right? And sort of, that's the curve of alertness and performance. Now, if you sleep at the wrong time or not enough, obviously your alertness and therefore your performance will be impacted upon, will be reduced. And that can have lots of implications in the work environment for leaders. That first of all, it's alertness probably. That's the first thing to be affected. And we all need to be alert. We all need to be able to focus and concentrate, but we also need to be able to shift our attention. shift it purposefully where we want to shift it, where it needs to go, because constantly the demands around us are changing. As someone comes and needs our help, or there's a phone call, an email coming in. So you have to be able to switch. If you haven't slept very well, all of this will be much, much harder. And generally, your situational awareness is reduced. And then related to that, also your ability to assess risk accurately. And if you are the leader, you are also the decision maker, or certainly one of them. And so it's impacts on your ability to make decisions. And you may then, you know, take the company in a completely wrong direction. So you say yes to a deal or no to a deal. And, you know, that has then negative repercussions. So there's a lot that we need the sleep for, and that is unfortunately negatively impacted upon, you know, too little or poor quality sleep.
So this is really serious stuff in terms of the impact it can have. And you mentioned the alertness. It's you can almost liken it to drink driving, and almost, you know, that sort of dampening of alertness. You know, it makes you really become aware of the impact that can have on, like you said, decision making. But that situational awareness of what am I making it mean versus what else might it mean going on. One thing I wanted to talk about, the rhythms, and you mentioned the peak levels of alertness versus when it goes down, you know, the levels of alertness. I read somewhere, and it's probably just validating whether it's myth or not, but we have peak levels between 10 and 12 in the morning, and then 3 o'clock is that dip, where then it sort of peaks again between 4 and 6. Is that myth or is that true?
It will be true for some people and not for others. Again, it depends, are you a lark or an owl? So I'm always very careful with giving sort of specific clock times, because if you are a late person who naturally wants to sleep between 2 a.m. and 10 a.m., for example, your peak of alertness, or your first peak in the daytime, won't be, you know, between 10 and 12, just because you've just woken up naturally at 10. So everything will be shifted there. Yeah, so I think it's much more important to be aware of this rhythm, the peaks and its troughs, and then also know, okay, what is my personal sleep timing? And then you will get a feel for when, you know, your performance is at its peaks and when you naturally have sort of that low point, but rather than getting hung up on specific clock times.
And you mentioned larks and owls. Is it binary that there's these two types that we tend to be in, or is there more to it?
No, so that's what I mean. There's a huge spectrum of sort of 11 to 12 hours between the two extremes, right? And everyone else falls somewhere along the spectrum. And there isn't really a term for the one in the middle. Some people call it the hummingbird. Others, I think, have called it the dove. I think so, you know, that term is still up for grabs. It's not binary. And there is also across our lifespan a bit of a shift. So kids, generally speaking, they are early, to the dismay of their parents often. Teenagers, they swing back. They naturally have what we call delayed body clock. So they want to go to bed late. And because they still need 10, 11 hours, depending on age, they, of course, want to wake up late in the morning, but they can't because then there's school's time. Yeah. And so a lot of teenagers actually are cutting short their sleep and are sleep deprived. And then when we are sort of in our early 20s, it shifts forward again, then sort of it settles for some time. And that's really when we see then this spectrum with the larks and owls at the end. And as we become older, there is generally a shift to become earlier again. But, you know, a late owl will never be an early lark. That won't happen. But it's sort of a bit of a shift across the board as we age again to the earlier times.
So Kat, when organizations are looking at optimizing productivity across an organization, we're now in the place where we've almost got five generations in the workplace. If we were to try and optimize our performance, how do we ever cater for five generations that may need different levels of sleep, different levels of peak performance or alertness across the day? How is anybody ever meant to work with that? I mean, that's quite a complex picture, isn't it?
Yeah, and then we're also globally connected to different time zones, which I then actually think, you know, it's pretty easy. You figure out who are the earlies, and they come in early and they can deal with Asia and Australia. and you figure out who are the lates, right? And they can then work with America, and the rest sort of is in the middle and works with Europe and African countries. So it's about finding out, investing a bit of time and being curious, what is my workforce like? What are the different chronotypes? That's the term, the scientific term. What are they? And you can, there are tests, as in questionnaires you can do. They're relatively easy, so low cost. And then assign people accordingly, because that's when you actually maximize your employees, your workforce, if you figure out when do they perform best. And of course, there will be times that, an early person has to sort of maybe stay late. And that's okay if that happens occasionally. Yeah. So that's perfectly fine. But if you find that out, well, then you make the most use of your employees. But also, it's not just their productivity, it's they will be happy as well, because they then can get the sleep they need. And sleep's not just important for performance, it's important for our emotional well-being, our mood. And I would actually say that that is the most important part or aspect an employer should be interested in, because a happy workforce is a productive workforce that stays with you, right, and puts in the work that is needed. And so I think that's what employers should watch out for.
There's a huge focus on employee experiences, relating to employee engagement and therefore productivity and results. And whilst organizations are spending an awful lot of time surveying people, one thing we probably don't ever take into account is the impact we're having on forcing them into this rigid work cycle that may not work for them. And so they may be coming to work not feeling that great, not because they hate work, but because they haven't had enough sleep, because their body clock is working at a different rhythm to other people in the organization. I guess COVID has probably accelerated this whole approach. Rather than working from home, it's about working flexibly. How can we work flexibly in a way that works for each one of us?
By having a conversation about it. And I think there's then also an element of trust needed from both sides. But I think it starts with a conversation. And in addition, mentioning working from home and COVID situation, there is sleep, but there's also a lot of responsibilities now on people's shoulders if there is a family or if they may be the primary caregiver to a spouse who's ill or another family member. So there's a lot that comes together there. But I think it's, as I said, the honest conversation. There's also an education piece to this, so that everyone understands why sleep is so important and what impacts on sleep. And equally, what sleep impacts upon. It's not a one-way street. It's a bit like, night and day, they sort of go together. Form a bi-directional relationship, and you have the same with sleep and your waking day. They both impact on each other, and I think that's what needs to be understood so that you then can maximize the benefits.
One of the other, when I was looking into this whole concept of chronobiology, one of the other things I came across was the link between food in terms of nutrition, when you should be eating and the rhythm around that. Now, often again, we working from home, many people might be snacking throughout the day, or are there, is this a myth, or are there actual cycles of when we should be eating versus the fasting periods, between when we shouldn't be eating?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of it is, if we just look back to what our ancestors did, because from a biological point of view, we're still very much cavemen and cavewomen. That hasn't changed. Our environment, our living environment and how we work, that has changed dramatically over the last 200 years or so. But biologically, that change hasn't happened. And so we evolved to be active during the day and inactive, resting, sleeping at night. And so our physiology is adapted to exactly this, meaning that we are adapted to eating and digesting food when the sun's out, and then for everything internally to kind of sort of say, okay, job done for today, right? We're shutting down now. And that's when problem arise, when you then eat late in the evening or at night, Your body is no longer prepared to deal with it. And now we're understanding more and more about the gut microbiome as well and how that is impacting on digestion. And we see changing levels of bacteria, not just numbers, but also the different species across a 24-hour day. All of that will be affected and disturbed if we're eating at the wrong time, as in during the dark phase, basically. Yeah. And that then will lead to, again, metabolic problems, but probably also performance problems, because everything is connected there. So absolutely, there are times for eating and there are times for fasting and paying attention to light and dark. And there's a lot of research at the moment looking at time-restricted eating, as it's called. And basically, it looks like the longer you can fast overnight, the better. So, you know, maybe 10 hours, 11 hours, 12 hours. I think some people manage to do it for 14 hours. And so really minimizing that eating window, which is during the day. And what studies have found is that if you stop eating earlier in the day, you are more likely to reduce your weight than if you eat the same amount of calories, but have your last meal later in the evening. So there will be more and more research coming, and there is a great app called My Circadian Clock, which helps you to track your eating, basically your meal times, and later on help you also to reduce this eating window. And the nice thing is that this app, if you agree to it, the data will go to researchers in the States. His name is Sachin Panda. He is one of the big circadian rhythm researchers around eating in particular, to sort of help us, you know, gain more knowledge and then also come up and revise recommendations for eating.
So just to be clear, and by fasting, we're talking about the fasting window being the last meal you have versus the next time you eat, which is the following day at breakfast. So by increasing that window and by eating our last meal much earlier in the day, there's a chance that it actually has a much better impact on our body in terms of physiologically that it has a benefits to us.
Yeah, absolutely. So physiologically, metabolically, but also in our performance, right? Because the knock-on effect is when you are generally healthier, your chances of having a healthy sleep are also higher. So again, everything ties together. And you're right, and apologies, I forgot to say this. So it's the fasting period is between your last meal and your breakfast. And it looks like that it's better if when you wake up in the morning, you don't immediately have your breakfast, to give yourself a bit of time. Now, you probably want to know how much time. Can't quite answer that yet. We need more studies, but maybe give it half an hour or an hour. You know, between waking up and then having your breakfast.
So basically a big breakfast, and you can still eat the same amount of calories in the day, but just finish early, and that will be the benefit to you. Okay, fantastic. Yeah. So in terms of, you mentioned the workers out there, the employees out there who are having to do shift work. A lot of people are tied to these rhythms of work that they can't get out of. What are they meant to do in terms of knowing that this science exists in terms of our performance? What can they do to help adjust?
It's notoriously difficult. So I admire and thank every shift worker because they are working against their clock, at least for some days as well. When they're working nights. But it's not just when they're working nights, it's also the shift coming off the nights or the shift from working days and then onto nights, right? So their clock is repeatedly thrown out of whack. And so that has an impact on, or can have an impact on their health overall. So it's really difficult, but one thing we always advise is to be, when you are on nights, be mindful of when you eat and what you eat at night. And so to have, you know, you'll eat at the beginning of the shift. And if you are hungry during the shift, which is likely to happen, it's about healthy snacks rather than the rich carbohydrate food. because that will again be much harder to sort of for the body to deal with.
So it's almost planning in advance, because a lot of the shift workers tend to be the emergency workers, the people who care for us, the people who are looking over us in a way, and we're reliant on them in all the stuff that they do, the amazing work that they do. So it's trying to make sure that if we're in their shoes, is plan ahead, try and, you know, make snacks and healthy snacks so that we're prepared and we've got them with us throughout the shift.
Yeah, exactly. And the more stable the shift patterns are, the better as well. I think that's the worst if shift patterns are constantly changing, and companies are aware of that and try to do their best, you know, to keep them as stable as possible. Absolutely.
It's a fascinating topic, the chronobiology, the natural body clock rhythm. And I just think a final point, if we were to understand, or if we were to try and acknowledge or just become more cognizant, I guess, of whether we're getting enough sleep. I find myself, I wake up before the alarm clock. My wife, it takes the alarm clock to wake her up. I always think that's an indication that she's not getting enough sleep, and I've managed to get enough. Is there some quick indication that can tell us whether we're getting enough, or whether at least we're in sync with our body?
So you're absolutely right. You know, typically if you wake up with an alarm clock, if you rely on that, and there's about 80% of certainly the European population who do, you're cutting short your sleep. And because without that alarm, you would continue to sleep. So there is a sleep debt that's building up. The best way, I think, is to just listen in to your body, and you don't need any gadgets to tell you actually how you slept. First of all, listen in to how do you feel. Now, it's important to be aware of what's called sleep inertia. And again, to the extent of this varies between people, but sleep inertia is sort of that sense of grogginess that we can have the moment we wake up. And for some people, it's gone within a few minutes. For many, it takes about half an hour, but it can take a bit longer. Yeah. But it's this listening in, how do I feel? And how am I able to go about my day, you know, with a good level of performance? Do I rely on stimulants or not? What's my mood like across the day? Again, including that dip in the afternoon, or being aware that tiredness levels might rise a little bit then. But it's looking across the day, how do I feel? You know, how am I able to perform? And that will tell you a lot about whether or not you're getting enough sleep at night.
And Kat, I guess we're probably not doing ourselves any favors then, on for those of us who work Monday to Friday, on a Friday evening where we decide to then have a late night watching, sort of binge watching TV, whatever it might be, and then having a lie-in at the weekend, because we're almost putting our body clock out of sync, I guess. And then for Monday, it's almost out of sync. Is that right?
Absolutely. So right at the beginning, we spoke about jet lag, the jet lag that is induced by traveling. Now, what you just described is called social jet lag, where in effect, you induce the same situation within the body, but you do this from the comfort of your sofa or your bed, right? You're not leaving this time zone. But social jet lag refers to the changing of our sleep times. And this can happen across the week. Every night is sort of different. But for many people, it's between the working week and the weekend that we sleep at different times there. And that, again, over time has negative impact on our health, on our well-being, and on our performance, and especially Monday morning. It's a bit like on Friday evening, you fly to the States, to New York, and then you come back Sunday night, Monday morning. Yeah, it's the same thing. And there's a nice study that was done only a couple of years ago that looked at social jet lag and constantly changing bedtimes, and that have shown how detrimental this is to our health overall.
I think there's a lot of us guilty of doing that, because we think at the weekend we can finally let go. So I guess in summary then, there's something about listening to our body, understanding our own natural rhythms that we work to, as employers, is allowing employees to work to their best times so we can maximize our levels of alertness, and also then trying to minimize this social jet lag that we might be prone to, because at the weekends we just want to let ourselves go a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I would say though, it's not that we're guilty of it, because I think there's two parts to this. One is a not knowing, Right. You hear everywhere how important sleep is. So it sometimes can be like, oh, yeah, let me just grab that sleep. But not knowing that there is also a circadian system, a circadian rhythm to this. So there's an element of not knowing. And then the second is the often rigid work times and the impact that has on our sleep. This sometimes, for me, a little bit odd, this demand, everyone has to be in the office or ready for work by 9 o'clock. 9 till 5, although we know that the 5 certainly doesn't exist anymore, it goes right into the evening. This one size fits all approach, that is not right, is not good for everyone. And I think that's what needs to change. And when that changes, that will then have a positive sort of knock-on effect on the social jet lag situation, together with a better education of everyone around the subject.
One of my observations when I first set the company up were there were three aspects that I thought that organizations really were missing a trick on, which was trust, wisdom, and authenticity. And you mentioned trust, and you know, how important is it that when we bring people into our organizations that we then trust them to work their way, to allow organizations to get the most out of their talents and all their experiences they bring to the table. So it's a really interesting point. Kat, I could talk to you all day. It's a fascinating subject, chronobiology. There's so much to this. Just remind me, what was your book again?
My book is called Sleep Sense, and it's a general sort of introduction to what sleep is and why it matters, with a few pointers of how to improve your sleep.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Thanks, Kat, for joining me today and for all the insights you provided. I'm sure it'll be really helpful. And there's an awful lot of food for thought for employers and managers and leaders out there of what we can do better.
Thank you.
So that's the concept of chronobiology. There's an awful lot of insights and science that has now informed us, probably things that we already knew intuitively, but we have these natural body clocks, these natural rhythms. And when we start to work against them, the implications can be huge on our health and well-being, but also on our productivity and our performance. And that has implications on work. So which organizations are going to be brave enough to say, we're going to depart from this fixation of 9 to 5 and actually start to work in the natural rhythm of our bodies and allow people to work their way, allowing us to really unlock our true productivity? It'll be interesting to see. Thanks very much. That's everything from me today. Amrit Sander from The Engagement Coach. I will see you soon. Take care.
The Engagement Coach Podcast.